From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM later on tonight. Those open lines, get ready for that. And don't forget, when you go to bed Saturday night into Sunday morning, daylight saving time starts again. Turn that clock up ahead 1 hour if your state participates in DST. Now, before we begin the program, I just want to relay our condolences to Cheryl Benedict. Cheryl was the wife, of course, of Coast to Coast guest intuitive healer Tom Benedict, whom I had met a couple years ago at an event in Ohio. Tom has passed away. The news is getting to us over the last day or so. He was an expert in the healing properties of stones. Now, when I saw him do this at the event in Ohio, I shook my head. I said, this can't be. But it was amazing the kind of work that he did. He subsequently is a guest and did a great job for us on Beyond Belief. He'd been on Coast to Coast. Tom Benedict is no longer with us. He will be missed. Another Coast to Coast guest. In Chicago tonight, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has canceled one of his signature rallies, saying that he did not want to see people get hurt after protesters packed into the Chicago arena where it was to take place, and a few fights started to break out. The announcement that the businessman would postpone the rally until another day led a large portion of the crowd inside the University of Illinois at the Chicago Pavilion to break out into cheers. Meanwhile, supporters of the candidate started chanting, "We want Trump! We want Trump!" Dr. John Curtis with us, onlinecolumnist.com. John, I thought Donald Trump did the right thing canceling that event tonight.
Well, I don't think there was any question there was going to be violence at the event. It was really quite a setup, and I think, you know, there's a number of folks, and Chicago is certainly a very restless city. It's got its own issues. One of the most violent cities in America. We all have heard, you know, the kind of problems with the police and, you know, and so forth. So, and I think Trump is, you know, sort of demonized in those communities as a racist. And you know, and you've seen a couple of events, isolated events take place at his rallies before, and people are escorted out. But I think if you get an unwieldy crowd, I mean, there could have been some problems.
We're going to have to watch this and monitor this to see if this happens at some of his other events. I know he's going to be in St. Louis soon, too, talking. And this is an effort, by the way. It's a coordinated effort to try to shut him down, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's certainly, I mean, Ted Cruz certainly played up on it today. You know, of course, he's looking for anything. The numbers don't look good for any of the other candidates going forward toward this next kind of Super Tuesday. Trump is looking very strong in Florida, North Carolina, Illinois. You know, even in Ohio, he's now running pretty even with John Kasich. Even actually some recent polls are showing him ahead. So I think Tuesday is essentially the end to the anti-Trump movement in the Republican Party if he manages to at least pull off Florida and the other
Illinois. Illinois is a big state too.
Illinois. He doesn't need to win Ohio, but if he runs the table on Tuesday, then I think the anti-Trump movement is broken. And as far as these protesters go, I think the police have to do a better job of screening people. If you have crowds as high as 25,000, even sometimes higher, more than that, I think it's very difficult to control, you know, embedded protesters that are designed to really cause havoc.
Yeah, but that's so difficult to monitor, John. I mean, if they come in, they keep their mouth shut, and they, you know, act peaceful walking in the door. How do you know?
Well, you don't, and I think there just has to be a very strong police presence. I mean, the Chicago police claimed that they had, you know, sufficient police in order to set down any kind of disruption. But I think that, you know, obviously he's got Secret Service and other private security details at all of his rallies. And I think the word was to him that we're in very dangerous territory at the Chicago event, and that's why it was canceled.
Okay, John, thanks. We're going to talk to you Tuesday, so circle it on the calendar after most of those primary states have their voting counted. And in this particular case, the last I heard, nobody was arrested and no one was hurt. But there was some shoving around going on inside that arena. North Korea has a missing submarine. Oh, boy. Where is it? And what is it up to? An official here says that the submarine is a 70-foot Yonah-class midget submarine that is diesel-powered and has a crew of two, but it does have room for squads of saboteurs. It was unclear who might have been aboard. North Korea does not operate large ballistic missile submarines. North Korea has not asked the United States to assist in search and rescue efforts. Well, the latest research suggesting that the San Andreas and the San Jacinto faults might have ruptured together in the past, and they might trigger more powerful destruction. Measuring the level of threat posed by severe earthquakes that could bring havoc to Southern California should be reviewed, according to scientists who believe the risk could be greater than previously thought. Just what we need to know. As Japan observed a moment of silence 5 years after the earthquake and tsunami killed more than 18,000 people, the official in charge of clearing out melted fuel at the country's damaged Fukushima plant said it could take 40 more years to finish the work. Keith Emerson, the legendary Emerson, Lake, and Palmer keyboardist who turned the instrument into every bit the powerful and cool rock tool as the guitar, has been found dead in his California home. Police are investigating it as a possible suicide. He was 71 years old. He was found with a single gunshot wound to the head when his girlfriend returned to their shared home. In recent years, the British-born rocker has been battling a painful condition that inflames the wall of the colon. A 112-year-old Israeli who lived through world wars and survived the Nazi concentration camp of Auschwitz is the world's oldest man now, according to the Guinness Book of Records. His name is Israel Crystal. He's 112 years, 178 days old as of March 11th. How about that? What else is going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center with his weekly report. Peter, what do we got this week?
Well, good evening, George. It's always great to be with you.
You'll probably
be relieved this week to know that I've got a short report, and I'll probably stay within the time limit this week, unlike the last week.
That's all right.
But I would like to just have a short preface, thanking the Coast to Coast listeners. Getting many very high-quality written reports from Coast listeners, and
super.
I just wanted to say I'm always grateful when they submit the data to our center. It's really a pleasure to work with them. Just four reports tonight. First one, briefly, from Hayesville, North Carolina. Last Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, gentleman was standing at his mountaintop home in Hayesville. That's out in the extreme western end of North Carolina, near Chattooga Lake, I think it is. He looked up to the southern sky, was admiring the Orion's Belt and the star Sirius, and he was confused by a very distinctly red object out there. What troubled him most of all, though, was it suddenly accelerated at a blistering pace and went streaking off into the western sky. Very interesting sighting. We'll never know what that object is, but I'm pleased to know about it. 2 days later, New York City, Brooklyn, New York, couldn't be probably a more heavily populated area in our country. A woman was watching some city workers trim the tops of some trees on her street. Her attention was suddenly drawn to a very strange object up in the sky. At first, she thought it was a Mylar balloon, but what troubled her was that it was pulsing at a regular rate. It seemed to change shape. She called her daughter over to make sure she wasn't hallucinating. Her daughter got the binoculars. They looked at it. Suddenly, it started accelerating to the north and disappeared very abruptly. Very interesting sighting. I mention it in part two because of the next report from Farmingdale, New York, which is about 40 miles to the east of Brooklyn and New York City. Gentleman was standing with his wife. They were looking into the eastern sky. They saw a pyramid-shaped object that had a distinctly black and blue appearance to it. It drew their attention immediately. Then they realized there were two more perhaps smaller, behind and to the right of the principal one, the nearest one. What they found so interesting is it had a halo of blue light around it. Suddenly it changed its apparent course to the west, changed, headed to the north, and very quickly disappeared in the northern sky. And finally, Van Buren, Arkansas, very close to Fort Smith. This also was last Tuesday, the 8th of March. Gentleman had gone to bed, and he heard his son come in. His son came up to his room and said, "Why didn't you answer your phone?" The son had been out driving near Van Buren, and his attention was drawn to a series of lights just above his car. He stopped his car, got out, and saw one of these huge, huge triangles directly above him. His father and grandfather both talked to him shortly after the sighting. They both write that he was very visibly shaken. He saw something unusual. And last item tonight, already had six, excuse me, very interesting reports from Virginia, North Carolina, Nebraska, Arizona, Pennsylvania, and Florida. It's been a busy week.
It sure has, Peter. Okay, you take care of yourself. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, how many presidential candidates have dealt with the occult or even have been witnessed of what's going on with the occult? And what about presidents? What have they seen? What have they done with the occult? Up next, Mitch Horowitz joins us as we talk about presidents and the occult next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Now, the closest I want to get to politics tonight, after everything's been going on, is just to talk about presidents, their families, and the occult. That's it. So even when we get into open lines in a couple hours, let's stay away from the election stuff. Just tonight, I'll have open lines Tuesday. We can do that right after those primaries. Let me tell you a little bit about Mitch Horowitz. Raised into a world of Bigfoot stories, UFO sightings, and Carlos Castaneda books, he grew determined to find the truth behind it all. Mitch has written on everything from the war on witches to the secret life of Ronald Reagan. He is vice president, editor-in-chief at Tarcher Penguin. That's a division of Penguin Books. And, of course, he's a noted author himself. One Simple Idea, that's one of his books. How about the other one? Occult America. And, of course, he has been on our program quite often, Mr. Horowitz. People just keep asking for you to come back. So here
well,
you
great
are.
To be here. Great to be here, George. Thank you.
You too, Mitch.
I love you and your listeners. Very glad to be with you.
You know, we'll talk about presidents tonight, but thank God we're going to talk about some paranormal stuff with them, aren't we?
Oh, for sure.
Tell me about what's been going on in the White House. Is it really that haunted?
You know, it's interesting. Everybody talks about it. People at the highest levels of government are very frank about saying the White House seems to be haunted. Hillary Clinton has talked about hearing ghosts, seeing things, hearing strange bumps in the White House. She was on the Rosie O'Donnell show years ago and was describing that. And more recently, Jenna Bush, one of the two daughters of George W. Bush, spoke on the Tonight Show about experiencing ghostly phenomena in the White House in her own bedroom. Jenna said that this weird operatic music was coming out of the fireplace in her bedroom, and she couldn't figure out where it was coming from. And she ran to wake her other sister, Barbara, who was in another room. And Barbara said, "That's nonsense. It's ridiculous. Go back to sleep." So a few nights later, she had Barbara sleep in the room with her because she was kind of creeped out. The telephone rings kind of out of nowhere, wakes the girls up. They didn't know what that was all about. And then both of them, both presidential daughters, hear this strange kind of 1920s jazz music coming directly out of the fireplace. And they asked some of the White House staff about it, and they said, "We can't explain it. It happens all the time." And Jenna Bush has talked about this on panels about growing up in the White House and on national television. There are more ghost stories about the White House than any other residence in America.
Well, and you know, Mitch, that house is secure, so there's nobody there playing around, playing a game.
That's right, and this stretches across generations. Winston Churchill refused to sleep in the Lincoln bedroom because he said he had encountered a ghost there. All kinds of visiting dignitaries have told these stories. But there's one ghost story about the White House, which is a bona fide fake. And if your listeners encounter it online, I want to give them a little warning about it.
Okay.
There's a story circulating that Michelle Obama told a visiting group of kids on a tour of the White House that there was a ghost that would prowl into the presidential bedroom at night and gnaw on her toes and the president's toes. This has made it into a children's book. It's made it into newspaper articles in Russia, and it's all over the internet. The whole thing, I don't even know whether to call it a hoax or a misunderstanding. In 2009, there was a political blogger at the Los Angeles Times who produced this, in my view, very silly and ridiculously long blog, making a joke about Michelle Obama telling these kids this ghost story. What she really did was she told the kids about the White House dog who would wake up the president at night and gnaw on their
feet. Nibble at their toes, yeah.
Yeah, and the reporter thought he was being funny. It wasn't even April 1st or anything like that, and he turned this into this long, protracted joke. And so what was produced as a rather lame and extended joke is now taken seriously. So when you come across the story about the a ghost in the Obama White House, that's one not to believe.
It's difficult sometimes, Mitch, to ascertain what stories are real and which ones are not.
Yeah, yeah. The thing I look for really is the source. I mean, when you're tracking occult history, the big question you face is which source can you trust? Now, for example, people ask me all the time, is it true that Abraham Lincoln held seances in the White House? And I've weighed the evidence, and my verdict is yes, he did, because he permitted a reporter from the Boston Gazette to be present at one of these seances. This was during the Civil War. And the great biographer of Lincoln, Carl Sandburg, wondered why would the president permit a reporter to be present at a seance. It would seem like an embarrassing thing. But I think what Sandburg may have missed is that in the mid-19th century, millions of Americans were involved in spiritualism or talking to the dead. To some people, it was a deadly serious business. That was the case with Mary Todd Lincoln. To others, it was kind of a novelty. And I think Lincoln wanted a reporter there because he was trying to demonstrate that even during wartime command, he could kind of kick back and engage in the type of novelty that other Americans were dabbling in. But honest to God, this story in the Boston Gazette ran all over the country. It got picked up in some newspapers in the Confederacy even. So when dealing with those kinds of sources, it's clear that probably truth is on the side of the strange story.
You know, as you were talking about the dog story nibbling at the toes of the president and Michelle Obama, there was a guy in Switzerland, true story, who could not use his legs and his toes, and you know, and he was bedridden, and he was developing bed sores all over his body, and was on the verge of getting septic shock from infections. His dog ate his toes off, and apparently the toes were going to be or were infected. He would have died had the toes remained on him. What a bizarre story that was.
That is bizarre. And it, actually, in ancient Greek and Roman times, people used to have dogs lick their wounds because they disinfected them. So that's actually been around for a long time, oddly enough.
Nancy Reagan, we just lost her, and one heck of a first lady.
Yep.
But she loved the supernatural. She brought that into the White House, didn't she?
She really did. She really did. And the thing I admired about the Reagans is that they never made a secret of their occult interests. You know, Ronald Reagan, and to some extent Nancy, would talk with surprising frankness about all this stuff. The Reagans were pals with astrologers and numerologists and tarot card readers going back to their Hollywood years. They spent 30 years in Hollywood, and they saw themselves very much as a part of its culture. In Ronald Reagan's memoir, a book called Where's the Rest of Me that he published in the 1960s, he identified a man by the name of Carol Reiter as one of his best friends. Carol Reiter was one of the most famous astrologers in the nation, and Reagan talked freely about accepting his advice and so forth. Reagan would speak about premonitory dreams, witnessing UFOs, his belief that a psychical professor in college had predicted his political rise. During his presidential campaign in 1980, he very frankly and openly spoke with a reporter about how he had a relationship with the psychic Jean Dixon, but he was sort of growing sour.
Hold on for a second, Mitch. So I want to pick up the Reagan stories, because they even had an astrologer tell them what numbers to use on their house in Bel Air, which is where Nancy passed away. That's a great story, too. We'll be back with more. And what a night. Open lines, paranormal. We've got it all for you tonight. Mitch Horowitz with us. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Mitch Horowitz. And we're lucky to have Mitch next hour to take phone calls with you as we talk about the paranormal. We're talking about the ghosts of the White House, what some of the presidents may have seen, did not, first ladies. Back to Nancy Reagan, Mitch. She hired an astrologer to, I think, change the address of her Bel Air home when they were, and they, you know, that's the house she died in.
That's right. After the Reagans left the White House, they bought a retirement home in Bel Air. And as coincidence would have it, the number of the home was 666.
And you've got to change that.
Nancy was having none of that. So she pulled some strings with the local zoning authorities, and she got that house number changed. You know, Reagan and his wife, they were superstitious folks. They believed in lucky numbers, unlucky numbers, and of course, most famously, after the assassination attempt on Reagan, Nancy consulted regularly, sometimes daily, with astrologer Joan Quigley from San Francisco. Joan recently died herself, actually. Nancy moved her way through several astrologers. For a while, Jean Dixon was popular with the Reagans, but she didn't think that Ron was going to make it to the White House, so she had a falling out with Nancy, and Nancy switched her alliance to Joan Quigley.
That's the way to do it. I had a credit card. The code on the back, CVC code, was 666.
It's discomforting. Now, there are a lot of hotels
and
apartment buildings that will omit the 13th floor. People don't want to stay on it. And, you know, you find, if you look at an elevator bank, you'll be surprised. You won't often see a 13th floor.
The 1960s were interesting times and tough times, Mitch, for this country, specifically from 63 to 68. When we saw John F. Kennedy get gunned down, Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, all were assassinated. Some people had thought, was this some kind of occult conspiracy to shut down America? What were you able to find out there?
This was a really weird rumor that circulated throughout the country in 1968. And like some rumors, it had certain threads of truth to it. The writer Truman Capote was on The Tonight Show in 1968 with Johnny Carson. And Capote developed this theory that the murders of Bobby Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King were linked by this occult conspiracy. He theorized that Madame Blavatsky, the great 19th century occultist and the founder of Theosophy, had authored some sort of a manual for revolution, where she said that if you could assassinate key people in the nation, you could destabilize the nation. It was a kind of covert guerrilla warfare. And he pointed out that Sirhan Sirhan, the assassin of Bobby Kennedy, had asked for and received a copy of Madame Blavatsky's book, The Secret Doctrine, while he was in custody. That story is, in fact, true. But everything else in the Capote story seems to be entirely made up. There was no manual for revolution that Madame Blavatsky wrote. She never wrote a violent word in her life. It's not clear where Capote got this theory from, and of course he's dead now, so I'm unable to ask him. But there is a weird footnote to the story, and that is that Sirhan Sirhan did request copies of Madame Blavatsky's books while he was in custody, and he had been a member of a Rosicrucian organization, AMORC, the Ancient Mystical Order of the Rosy Cross, but records show that he was expelled from the organization because he failed to pay a $2 lesson fee. But he did have those occult interests. That is a fact.
I may, and I'm going to put that in quotes, have an opportunity to interview Sirhan Sirhan.
Wow.
They're going through an appeal process, and if that does not work, I may be able to get into the prison he's in at San Diego. But if so, I will ask him that question.
That would be something that would be a real service to the historical record.
We will do that. Now, Donald Trump apparently swears by some kind of mystical book, doesn't he?
That's, That's right. Donald Trump says the book that put him in business was The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale, which, although it's a familiar-sounding book, has very mystical undercurrents. Peale's genius was that he took all of these magical and occult ideas that were coming out of transcendentalism and coming out of all kinds of mystical experiments here in America, and he reprocessed them into biblical language, into language that would be familiar to the church going public. But Peale's ideas are core new thought or mind power, the belief that thoughts make things happen, the belief that thoughts are causative. It's a very mystical, metaphysical program. If anybody hasn't read The Power of Positive Thinking, I strongly recommend it. Donald Trump has read it many times, and he speaks about the book in glowing terms. He was a congregant of Peale's, and he says that book was probably the single greatest influence on his life.
I get a lot of calls from people claiming that the presidents, most past presidents, were members of the Freemason Society.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, big deal?
Well, quite a few were. Of 44 American presidents, 14 have been Freemasons.
That's a pretty high percent.
It's a fairly high percentage. Now, the last full-fledged Freemason in the White House was Gerald Ford. Bill Clinton was a member of a Masonic youth group, but he never seemed to pursue Masonic rites into adulthood. The fact is, Masonry, particularly at the time of our country's founding, was a very influential force in America. I think it was a force for good. I admire Masonry. I think it had ideals of a kind of universal spiritual search. It defended ecumenism. It defended free speech. It provided some early examples of elections. It was an early voice in abolitionism. I love Freemasonry, and I think as occult organizations go, Masonry is an organization that Americans should be very proud of. But some people do fear the idea of a power behind the throne, and the fact is there really were a lot of Freemasons in the 19th and early 20th century who ascended to positions of political power. I think Masonry's political influence has sharply declined in our nation, which is why we haven't really had a Masonic president for a generation.
Richard Nixon,
yeah.
He actually had a few occult experiences?
Right. The last guy that you would associate with anything occult or esoteric. But get this. Richard Nixon's very loyal secretary, Rosemary Woods, was pals with the psychic Jean Dixon. And she would have sessions with Dixon, who would give her warnings to pass on to Nixon. And Rosemary Woods would dutifully do this.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1971, she used her influence with Nixon to get Jean Dixon an Oval Office session with Nixon. So Dixon, and we know this as a fact because it's on the White House tapes that Nixon would obsessively make. This is part of the public record now. Dixon comes into the Oval Office in 1971 and tells Nixon that there are all these terrorist threats facing the nation, but that he is a man who was born to be a great leader, a great unifier, and he, Nixon, can unify the entire nation. Now, Nixon seemed to be incredulous about some of what she was saying, and at one point in their session said to her, well, you know, you could sell anything, couldn't you? But he
I could just see him saying that too.
And national security advice seriously enough so that it's actually on record on White House tapes that he told Henry Kissinger that he wanted Kissinger to put together a blue ribbon panel that would investigate domestic terrorist threats. And that was something that Jean Dixon had him to do. So she did have some effect on American security policy.
And she may have been years ahead of herself, because look what's happening now.
Right, right. It's interesting. You know, Dixon was a tricky figure. You know, she would make thousands and thousands of public predictions, and most of them never came true. But once in a while, she would get an eerie hit. She became famous in 1956. Well, she became famous after the Kennedy assassination.
She warned him, did she not?
In 1956, there was a profile of Jean in Parade magazine, and she predicted that the 1960 election would be won by a young man, a Democrat, with brown hair, an athletic figure, who would be assassinated or die in office. And that's a pretty creepy hit.
That was written in print.
Yes, sir. It's in
a
magazine, 1956, a profile of Jean. Yeah.
God, did anybody go back to that after the fact?
You know, I have a whole article at Salon, actually, examining that record, you know, asking the question, did Jean predict Kennedy's assassination? People did go back to it, and it made Jean famous. Now, one of the tricky things with Jean is, though, when she wrote her memoirs in the mid-1960s, she kind of embellished the prophecy to make it look as if she had a greater, more vivid sense of what was going to happen than the original reference. That does go on, but the original reference stands as a pretty eerie prediction.
I see. I was told, even at that young age of 13 or 14 years old, that she warned Kennedy specifically not to go to Dallas. I don't know if that's true or not.
That she did make that claim, but it's always difficult to vet these things and to check these things out. You know, her original prediction is right there in print in Parade magazine, and she said that she did this and said this behind the scenes and in secret and in private, but it's very hard to vet that.
When you were on with me on Beyond Belief, which is an upcoming episode, and you did a great job, by the way, we talked a little bit about Teddy Roosevelt and a Bigfoot story.
Yeah.
Tell us that one again.
I think it's the greatest Bigfoot story ever written. And, you know, Teddy Roosevelt wore many hats, and he was a terrific writer and memoirist. In 1892, he published a book called The Wilderness Hunter about some of his big game hunting experiences. So he had been on a hunting trip in the 1880s in the wilderness of Idaho and Montana. And this intersection of Idaho and Montana at the time was still frontier. It was completely untamed. He had a German guide who had lived and grown up on the frontier. And the German guide told him this chilling story that several years earlier, he and a buddy of his were trapping and hunting in that very area. And they felt that they were being stalked. They kept hearing noise in the forest around them. They found footprints that looked like they belonged to a bear, but it was evident to the men that it was a bear walking on hind legs, and they couldn't figure out what this was. And the men separated at a certain point. One man went off to check some traps. Another man was back at camp preparing dinner. When the trapper came back to camp, he saw that his friend had been murdered, his neck broken, fangs were sunken into his neck, the body had been mutilated, tossed around, and there were these enormous animal-like footprints around the camp on hind legs. And Roosevelt found this story absolutely chilling. It may be the first Bigfoot story in American history. And it's by one of our presidents, Teddy Roosevelt.
Great story. Now, Jimmy Carter, too, dabbled a little bit in the occult, into the psychic world. Did he not?
Yeah, he did. You know, during Carter's administration and up until the administration of Bill Clinton, the CIA publicly had a psychic spy program called Operation Stargate.
That's
and
right.
They would use remote viewers to try to gather military intelligence. The Russians, of course, were doing the same thing. The Russians probably had a more highly developed program. So in 1978, a Soviet intelligence jet, intelligence gathering jet, crashes in Central Africa. And it's got all kinds of sensitive information on board. And both U.S. and Soviet reconnaissance teams are rushing to try to reach this plane so that they can get a hold of the intelligence information that it was carrying. The director of the CIA at the time, Stansfield Turner, appoints two remote viewers to try to find the coordinates and the whereabouts of the plane. They get perfect hits. They name the longitude and latitude with enough accuracy so that a CIA search and rescue team gets to the plane, downloads its intelligence, and gains a real military intelligence coup over the Soviet Union. Carter freely spoke about this after his presidency. He was giving a talk to a group of students in Atlanta. He told the story. He has repeated the story several times, and he was a real believer in and advocate of this remote viewing CIA program. Now, flash forward, when Bill Clinton came to office, the Cold War was over. People were looking for ways to cut the military budget, and Operation Stargate got cut. It was a small program. It was only about $20 million a year, which in Pentagon terms is
nothing.
Peanuts.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, the program got cut.
And many of those members have been guests on Coast to Coast, Mitch, and they have been wonderful with the information. I've always questioned all of them, saying maybe the government never canceled it, that they've got other people doing it. And the answer is always, George, we were the best of the best.
Yeah.
We'd be doing it.
Yeah.
So I guess it is over.
It seems to be over. The Russians are still doing it, though. The Russians still have a remote viewing program, and they will pool remote viewing with other forms of more conventional intelligence, and they use it as part of their intelligence apparatus.
What would you say would be the weirdest story coming out of the White House that had to do with the paranormal?
I have to say, the weirdest thing I discovered was several years ago, I was reading some speeches and some material that had been written by President Ronald Reagan, and I said to myself, gosh, some of these sentences and phrases are sounding awfully familiar to me. And I discovered that Reagan had been lifting certain ideas and phrases from the work of an occult scholar named Manly P. Hall, who is the writer of the famous Secret Teachings of All Ages.
Mm-hmm.
This is a man known to some of your listeners. And I was astonished to find that here was Ronald Reagan, who was much more than just a devotee of daily newspaper horoscopes, as people sometimes depict him, but he was reading books of Manly P. Hall's, like The Secret Destiny of America, which talked about the idea that America had been guided by these hidden adepts, these secret masters of wisdom. And Reagan, sure enough, was lifting some of these ideas from the earliest days of his political career in the 1950s, right up through his presidency in the 1980s. And I found evidence, which I haven't been able to confirm, that Reagan and Manly P. Hall may very well have met. But it's extraordinary because Manly P. Hall was thought of as this kind of underground, esoteric, occult scholar. That underground occultist was being read and had some influence on one of America's most popular presidents. It's an absolute fact. I've written about it for the Washington Post. I've written about it for Salon. There's just no mistaking it. So to find out that Reagan was kind of a student of Manly P. Hall was pretty wild to me.
And Nancy was, like we talked about, she was really into this too.
She was really gung-ho. She was really gung-ho. She consulted with Joan Quigley, the astrologer, almost every day at times. And this was a lifelong interest. I mean, these people were pals with numerologists and tarot readers. Lucille Ball tells a story in her memoirs that in the 1950s, she was at a dinner party at the home of the actor William Holden, who was a good friend of the Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
Ron and Nancy show up late, all excited, all out of breath, and they start telling everyone they were driving down the coastal highway, and they witnessed a flying saucer, a UFO, and they stopped for 45 minutes gazing at it. They were talking about this stuff going back years.
Mitch, we're going to come back and take phone calls with you about the occult on Coast to Coast AM.